Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Prophecy Investor and Analyst Update. I would like to introduce Paul Venter and John Lee. Please go ahead.
Morning, everybody. It's Scott Parsons here, Vice President of Corporate Development for Prophecy Resource Corp. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us this morning for a corporate update on behalf of the company. This morning on the line we have for you John Lee, our President, CEO, and Co-Chairman. We have Mr. Paul Venter, our Director of Coal Operations in Mongolia, and Dr. John Morganti, a Senior Advisor to the company. This morning, Mr. Venter was intending on giving an update on our coal operations, but unfortunately he has come down with pneumonia over the last couple of days. Mr. Lee will give the update on the coal operations. Mr. Venter, however, will remain on the line for as long as possible for the Q&A and for any interjections that he may have. Following the coal update, Dr. John Morganti will give us an update on our Lynn Lake nickel operations in Manitoba, Canada, and also our Walgreen nickel platinum palladium play in the Yukon in Canada. At this time, I'd like to pass the line over to Mr. John Lee. Good morning, John, and the stage is all yours.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for the introduction. And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the call. Prophecy inherited these coal assets from Red Hill Energy, as you might recall. The merger was completed in April, and the focus of the company had always been to advance these assets, in particular the Ulan-Novo deposit near the Russian border. I myself have spent almost exclusively entire summer stationed in Mongolia. And when I first arrived in Mongolia in June, we had a staff of three people in the office. And my job was to quickly install the capable team and the technical staff competent enough to supervise the follow-up mining operations in Mongolia. And I was pleased to say that currently there are over 12 staff full-time in our Ulaanbaatar office, including engineers and geologists and administration and accounting. In June, we signed on Layton Engineering, and currently Layton has 50 people on staff. We have two expats, one by the name of Daryl Wright, who is an Australian, that's supervising Layton on a full-time basis. And also, we are very glad and fortunate to have brought Mr. Paul Venter, South African and now a resident in the U.K., with over 30 years of experience in the power plant operating industry and had the extensive experience in Russia, assisting us in the operations in Mongolia, as well as forging good relationship with Russia. Red Hill has been operating in Mongolia for a number of years. However, it's really on a defensive mode. When I first came into Mongolia, I had to really really rekindle our relationship with the government, which started out as being somewhat distant. And we're just very pleased to report that our current relationship with the government is somewhat warm. We are in daily contact with the government regarding the final site inspection visit before we can commence production. It's important to note that there's a bit of confusion in that Prophecy are in possession with all the mining licenses. All the licenses are required to go to production, namely the water license, the environmental license, the mining license, which are 40 years, renewable for another 30 years. The inspection and the mining permit is a part of the standard protocol, and as a last step in the government approving us go to production. And we can only do that when all the necessary equipment and staff are on site ready to begin production. And as I mentioned, we are in daily contact with the ministries, and we remain in good terms with them. We would like to say that the visit is imminent. However, there's no assurance it could take place. It would take place quickly. There's also been substantial interest on the offtake for Ulaanovo. We have received written expressions of interest to purchase Ulaanovo coal, anywhere from 1 million tons plus. The destination for the coal range from local power plants just north of the border all the way to the eastern seaboards. And there are people that want our coal along the ways from the border to the eastern seaboard. We have also received, in terms of written expression, non-binding MOUs. However, we cannot at this stage advance further of these contracts until we have the green light from the government. But we do expect to conclude the discussion on the offtake soon after the government green light. During my stay in Mongolia, it's a very interesting experience, and it's a very literate country, and where the rule of laws are upheld well. I've been to Brazil and Bolivia and Peru, and probably couldn't say the same. And during my time in Mongolia, we also have gained significant coverage in Mongolia, where Prophecy is really quite a well-known name now within Mongolia. We had TV coverage, newsletter coverage, as well as two research reports that were published within the last 60 days with a very favorable ratings, one by Eurasia Capital and one by Frontier Securities, both with stations in Mongolia as well as in Hong Kong. I'd like to say that we have made a significant progress towards Ulan-Ude from the day that we acquired the property, and I think the day was April 21st. We have since then signed on Layton Engineering to provide the contract mining, secure the facility at the railway station of upwards of 1.5 million tons into Russia. We have also signed a marketing agreement with Sochi, which are providing us very invaluable insights. I was just in Beijing 2 weeks ago and in discussion with Sochi about the regional market intelligence. So we have very good terms with Layton. And Layton has completed all the pre-mining stripping activities. We have Layton has removed 1.5 million tons of waste. I think the details of Layton's activities can be referred to in the past news release. And we're at the final stage of getting to production and realize the cash flow. So that is the status on Ulan-Ude, where we have the 200 million tons of measured indicated coal of very high quality, where the first 20 million tons will require no washing. I'd like to move on to Changana quickly. Changana, we have also made significant progress since we took over the asset in April. We have spent $700,000 with the most extensive drill program, whereby we have upgraded all the inferred Changana resource into a measured indicated category, which right now stands at over 1.2 billion tons. I'd like to note that the Changana deposit sits within the same coal basin, Niagara Coal Basin, shared with Vale CVRD, which is the second largest mining company in the world. And altogether, this Niagara Coal Basin has over 5 billion tons of coal. In addition to having completed the drill program and published a resource estimate revision, we have entertained several investor groups on site, including power plant construction companies. And the plan for Changana is not to export the coal, given that the coal is in the middle of Mongolia, somewhat distant from both Russia and China. Plus, the Changana coal is of lesser quality than Ulan-Ude. And therefore, the ideal scenario is to build a power plant. We have been approached by a couple of very powerful local mining groups in helping us to secure the construction license for power plant, as well as the license to distribute power within Mongolia and outside of Mongolia. And the groups have also expressed interest to help us secure offtake agreement within Mongolia, both with the government, both with the public and private enterprises. I expect news releases on Changana to be rolled out in the months and years to come. However, this is not just however, it's important to note that the focus for the company is Ulan-Ude, and it might seem that based on the frequency of the news releases that the company are focusing on Canadian assets, but it's just because a lot of things are going on behind the scenes or they're not worth news releasing. And I think the message investors given us are very loud and clear, and this is where I spend most of my summer time in Mongolia, currently in Hong Kong. With that, I'd like to turn over the control of this call to Dr. John Morganti to talk about our Canadian operation, specifically Lynn Lake and Wild Green.
Thanks, John. Prophecy is not only into the coal energy business, but it also is looking at the nickel business in North America. And there are two coherent themes for our properties, one in Lynn Lake and one in at Well Green in the Yukon territory. And basically, those themes are, one, the nickel market. China demands a lot of nickel. The current future production of nickel hinges on lateritic nickel, which has some significant issues. These include, they are dominated by HPAL, high-pressure leach systems. And since Anaconda in the 1996 era in Australia, the failure of that and the increase in operating costs, basically these things have cost overruns on the capital, which you can see at Ravensthorpe, which BHP had. And they also have leach issues with their vesicles, which they use to leach the ore. There's high acid consumption and high power consumption, all of which make the production of nickel high cost. Voisey's Bay is the only recent sulfide mine to come on into production of over 60,000 tons per annum nickel production. And this is really unique because most of the future of nickel is the laterites, and they're having problems. If you look at nickel on a cost curve, the highest cost 50% production part of the curve are all laterites with pig nickel at the top, which is a type of nickel that's made in China but is very high cost. PGMs, approximately 76% of platinum is produced in South Africa. Approximately 55% of palladium is produced from Russia. Platinum from South Africa is at risk politically from the government, and there is a safety issue with the underground mines where most of the production is from. The problem is that South Africa, Russia, PGMs are located outside of that those areas. They're in small amounts of byproduct, for example, Sudbury, which is losing a lot of its PGM production, or they're in layered intrusions, which are hard to produce and underground and not very large. Prophecy has two nickel plays. One is Lynn Lake. Lynn Lake area has produced approximately 20 million tons of ore from a number of deposits that were mined by Sherritt Gordon. There are two areas based on mafic intrusion host rocks. These are the A plug, which contains, and I'll go through a quick list, A, B, C, D, E, J, G, M, N, O, P ore deposits. These were underground deposits that were mined by Sherritts in the 50s and 60s. These provided a total of 28 million tons of ore, grading about 0.9% nickel and about 0.48% copper. The EL plug, which is the second area, contains the ELE and the ELU, and these provided about 1.9 million tons, grading 2.07% nickel and 0.76% copper. Prophecy has its deposits in the A plug, which it's currently exploring, and these would be accessed through a Farley shaft, which is flooded but can be dewatered. New discoveries have been made recently, and that is the Disco discovery, which we are currently exploring. A mineral resource has been estimated by Wardrope and a technical report for the N, the O, and the G deposits at a 0.4 nickel equivalent cutoff grade, and the measured and indicated resources are 22.9 million tons grading 0.57% nickel and 0.3% copper. Inferred resources are 8 million tons at 0.5% nickel and 0.28% copper. Currently, there is a 3,000-meter drill program following a matrix deep IP survey, and the first hole is currently about 300 meters deep, and it is based on not only the geophysics, but the geology and the fact that it's 300 meters below the current known Disco deposit, and that drilling is proceeding right now. Wellgreen is part of the Kalani ultramafic belt, and this is a new property that Prophecy has acquired, and actually since the acquisition, we have found that there's a whole new play that really is of significance. The ultramafic belt is 600 kilometers long, going from southeast Alaska to northern BC, and part of it's in the Kalani area of Yukon Territory, and Wellgreen consists mostly of a massive sulfide, and that was the original target that most people have looked at, which was mined in the 1970s by Hudson Bay. When the property was acquired, WGM, a consulting firm out of Toronto, had looked at the massive sulfide portion and related rocks and come up with the following resource. An indicated mineral resource is 6.4 million tons at 0.45% copper, 0.43 nickel, 0.377 grams per ton platinum, and 0.309 grams per ton palladium. An inferred resource of 24 million tons at 0.28% copper, 0.29% nickel, 0.377 grams per ton platinum, and 0.274 grams per ton palladium. And that was the resource target when the deal was done. But when we looked at the property on site, we found that there was a lot of disseminated sulfides, what we'll call low grade, that were very intriguing and incurred over a lot more width when we reviewed the core. Since that time, we made that current release that shows that we have in some of the associated rocks over 500 meters of, let me just get the figure here, 525 meters of 0.17% copper, 0.26% nickel, 0.248 grams per ton platinum, 0.248 grams per ton palladium, and 0.054 grams per ton gold. Now, this may sound low grade, but it's probably equivalent in value to a porphyry copper, which you can get economies of scale and lower the mining costs for open pit mining. And this is what the target has become. This has become a brand new target, and is while we would probably mine the massive sulfide also as sort of a sweetener, what we are looking at now is looking at the disseminated sulfide that is occurring around the deposit. To compare that, the North Met project, which is part of the Duluth complex in Minnesota, which a number of companies have just purchased into, that has approximately 638 million tons at 0.27% copper, 0.08% nickel, 0.34 grams per ton total PGM, including gold. These are very low-grade deposits, but what they're planning on doing is looking at them at economies of scale. For Wellgreen, because we have just started this look over the last few weeks, we do not know what the metallurgy would be of the project. As another example, the north limb of the Bushveld complex, which is probably the most economic, has only PGMs, and that grades 2.7 grams per ton PGMs, and that's approximately $72 a ton rock for mining purposes. And the value of Wellgreen would be much higher than that. So what we're looking at here is something that would be an economies of scale and be mining like probably analogy to a big porphyry open pit in BC. We currently have a drill program of five holes that are step out holes from that 500 meter intersection and looking for more of the lower grade material that might help us get a model together. And we're also reassembling all the data on the property, because since this is a new look at the property, we're definitely going to have to look at it with different eyes than we have in the past. And so to that end, we're going to relog the core, resample the core, and reorganize all the previous technical information. Thank you.
Thank you, John Morganti. At this time, I guess, John, if there's no further comments, Mr. Lee, on your side, we'll open it up for questioning right now.
Well, I think, Scott, let me just add a couple of things, and thanks, Dr. Morganti, for the update. Wellgreen is not a new story. It's had over 700 historic holes drilled on it, and the grade compares very favorably to the Duluth Metals Complex in Minnesota, except that Yukon is ranked as the top five country to top five areas to do mining business by the Fraser Institute. And also, judged on the per ton value raw basis, Wellgreen's raw value is in excess of over $100 a ton, assuming good metallurgy, and it compares very favorably to Mount Milligan Terrain Metals, as well as Continental Minerals. So we believe through systematic exploration and development, we can reap a lot of the benefits from Wellgreen. And if you'd allow me to go back to Mongolia, and I think I'm sure there will be a number of questions on the permits, and we are also curious as to where are we sitting on the permitting front. I had the chance to talk to the ambassador of Canada in Mongolia 3 weeks ago, and his name is Gregory, and together with his secretary, Sophie, in the room. And we explained the situation that we're in, and we were assured by the Canadian embassy that the normal course of doing business, securing a permit, is a normal course of doing business, and it would typically take anywhere from 3 to 6 months, if not longer. So therefore, we're not outside of the realm of getting this permit. We are slipping somewhat behind about by 30 days from the original envisioned target timeline. I think it's we're pulling all stops and working really very hard in obtaining these permits. Together with the winter times coming, the news are flashing the tapes in China where all the coal inventories at the eastern seaboards are at critical low levels of less than 7 days, and our coal is in good demand, and we remain very optimistic of commissioning to production this year, as well as securing a very good offtake agreement. With that, we're open to questions.
Thank you, John. If you wish to ask a question, simply press 01 on your handset. To withdraw your question, you press the pound sign. Again, to ask a question, you press 01. To cancel it, you press the pound sign. First question comes from David Durney. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just looking at the Wellgreen property map, and there's a number of other areas around there. Any intention to maybe expand your property holdings?
John, do you want me to answer that?
Yes, please.
Yeah, that belt's 600 kilometers long. There's the ultramafic, the Quill Creek, which is the ultramafic body that we're looking at, ultramafic and associated rocks, is just one of many, and there's a number of properties in the area that we will continue to look at. But first of all, we'd like to look at what we have and understand the model looking at these big deposits. If you look at the Duluth Gabbro, there's about 12 deposits over about over 100 kilometers of strike length. And a number of companies have these deposits and are working on them, but the resources for that whole Duluth Gabbro is probably over 3 billion tons. And so eventually that has to come to pass that we would look at these other areas. But first of all, we'd like to understand how the low-grade mineralization fits into all of this.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Randall Van from Haywood Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the update. Just wondering, has Layton operated in Mongolia before?
Yes. Well, Layton currently is stationed headquartered in Hong Kong. It is an Australian-listed company. I believe we might be the first or the second mining contract that Layton has signed and in Mongolia. And since then, Layton has signed a multi-billion dollar deal, contract mining, multi-year, multi-billion dollar contract with a company called Resource Energy, which is looking to list in Hong Kong with a raise of over $700 million. Layton also has a $250 million contract with another Hong Kong-listed company called Mongolian Energy Resources. It is the world's largest contract miner, and they're extremely competent in setting up our entire operations in 60 days.
Right. Yeah,
and
John,
many
I'm familiar.
Investors, yes?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Layton. They're a great company. I was just wondering if they were, you know, concurring with the guidance you were hearing on how soon you could get started or how soon you're likely to get this critical visit, and, you know, if they were confident in getting it, and it sounds like they are.
Sure. I think more to the point, there has been several unofficial visits, and everybody came away really quite impressed. Mongolian government is tendering contract to develop their Taban Togoi coking coal deposit, and as I hear, Layton is the front runner. We are very good terms with Mark Bailey, the managing director of Layton in Mongolia, and I think he also appreciates that we set off the chain of events that enable Layton to sign on all the other much bigger contracts this year.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is coming from Michael Wei from Bloomberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, I sort of had to jump on and off, but I think that I heard you say about the Mongolia operation that you have all the licenses in place. I wasn't aware of this. From what I gather from what you said is that as soon as you have all the equipment and everything in place, you can go. There's absolutely nothing you're waiting for from the Mongolian authorities. Is that true?
It is not true. I think something got lost in the translation. we have all the licenses available, which are non-revocable. However, we're waiting for what they call the site inspection visit in order to receive what they call the permit. And just to give you a little bit of a background, there is a discernible difference between a permit and a license. There's over 50% of the mines operating in Mongolia without a permit, and they will just receive a fine for not in compliance with the code. So it would not be ground for dismissal or for stoppage of mine. Obviously, we want to work with the government and adhere to all of the regulations. As we understand, the permit is something of a standard protocol, and it's a leap of faith in having to deploy all of the equipment and labor and waiting for that inspection visit and the permit. And we remain very optimistic of landing that final go ahead within a very short time frame.
Okay, so that permit is almost like a rubber stamp by the sounds of it. But I think that's one of the reasons why the share price is at about 46 cents, is because the investment community is not confident that, they're not sure that this final permit's going to come through by the Mongolian government because of the sort of capricious nature of the Mongolian government. Can you comment? I mean, I know you can't really comment on why your share price is there, but do you have any, can you comment on that?
Well, I think there's a couple of factors that might explain where we are in terms of our share price. The acquisition of Northern Platinum was closed the week before last week, and Northern Platinum is a company that whose shares are very liquid, illiquid, and has issued over 10 million shares of flow-through shares. So it's entirely possible that the investors of Northern Platinum take the first opportunity to liquidate their positions for the first time in years when they're able to. But I would also speculate that the permit might also have an overhang on the stock. And this is something that we are, our relationship with the ministry remain warm. The communication dialogue is open, and we're working diligently to set up a time that's convenient for everybody to come on site. Recall that the commission team for inspection involves several different inspectors from different departments, and so therefore we have to be able to properly set up a time to invite everybody up.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. We have no other questions in the queue at the moment. Again, as a reminder, to ask a question, simply press 01. To cancel your question, you press the pound sign. We have a question now. This one's coming from Helmut Pollinger from Pulvestor. Please go ahead.
Mr. Lee, have you looked for assays for rhodium on the Belgrade deposit?
We're still going to... Go ahead, John.
Yeah, John, go ahead.
We're still looking at that issue and sending... we're planning to send in a lot of samples for reanalysis. We found that some of the core was disseminated sulfides over previous programs over a number of years were not assayed, and we're going to look at that core, try to organize it, reassay it, and part of the program also is to go back and look at... the other elements associated with platinum and palladium.
And I would just add note that there was a summer field exploration program conducted by Northern Platinum, and they did a lot of ground sampling, had found samples of rhodium up to an over 1 gram per ton. The existence of rhodium at Wellgreen was also extensively well documented by the Canada Geological Bureau. So I think Wellgreen is one of the few deposits where there is significant possibility of rhodium present. And given the takeover of Marathon Minerals by Steelwater, I'm not aware of any PGM deposits controlled by a junior in Canada with significant resource outside of Wellgreen.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further questions for the moment. So back to you, John.
Well, I want to thank everybody who participated in the call. Prophecy has really come a long way. We started as a shell company back in October 2009, and since then we have made 5 property acquisitions, including the completion of 2 successful mergers, that landed us great assets. One is the 1.4 billion tons of coal in Mongolia, and the second one is one of the few legitimate PGM rhodium deposits left in all of Canada. Unfortunately, there's only one me, and the first priority that I, for me, was to make sure that our Mongolian team in the ground is sound and technically competent to carry the operation forth. As I mentioned earlier, I'm very pleased to report that we have really gathered an all-star technical team in Mongolia to help us proceed into production and transforming the company from a development stage company to a production stage company, hopefully shortly. I understand that there may be some investors that are being felt being left out in Europe and in North America, it is an area that I will wish to address in the very, very, very near future. Once we make sure the operations are sound and are smooth, so I would just ask investors for patience as I come to a town near you. And I would also like to say that Prophecy currently has about 125 million shares outstanding. It is impossible for us to track the number of investors or who the investors are, given our turnover on a monthly basis has increased from 3 million shares a month in earlier this year to over 15 million shares a month. So I would ask any significant shareholders or just any small shareholders and prospective investors interested in getting updates from Prophecy, proactively approach us and let us know, so that we can update you on a regular basis, either through email or through phone calls of your preference. It's important that our investors are kept up to date, and we would, given the fast pace and somewhat short-staffed situation that we're experiencing, we'll do our best to accommodate your request and get you up to the minute information.
Okay, thanks, John. I'd like to thank John Lee for joining us this morning, John Morganti for joining us, and Mr. Paul Venter. Paul, hope you're feeling better soon. We will be making the audio available on our website over the next couple of days, so please check back if anything was missed or if you need anyone else to hear it. As John mentioned, please call in to either of our numbers. We are always available for updates. Our numbers that you can be reached at, if you're local in North America, you can reach us at 604-642-2625. We also have a 1-800 number for the company, 1-800-459-5583. And again, we'd like to thank everybody on behalf of Prophecy Resources for calling in this morning. Thank you, gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Prophecy Investor and Analyst Update. Thank you for your participation and have a nice day.